Welcome back, y'all. It's the preseason podcast of the year. Jay Hicks behind the mic again in 2016 this time. Coming at you from the studio. My studio, the crib. Y'all know what it is, man. Jay Hicks, Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast is back. Got a very special guest joining us this evening on a Thursday, January the 7th, as I mentioned, 2016. Hard to believe it's 2016 already. I'm feeling more and more washed by the day, y'all. I guess that's just kind of what it is, man. You reach a certain age and it's just like it's over with. Like your best days are behind you and you kind of just keep pushing through, you know what I'm saying? I don't know, but I'm not washed on the podcast, though. That's the good news, is that when it comes to this podcast thing, I still got as much heart and vigor and energy as I always have had. 2016 is going to be a blast here at Hip Hop Sports Support. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, for subscribing and commenting on the show. We appreciate that. Thank you for everybody who's been commenting on all of our articles, been replying on Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. We greatly appreciate it. Again, if you're not hip to it, the website is hiphopsportsreport.com. The Twitter account is twitter.com/HHSReport and facebook.com/HHSReport as well. We post all of our new stuff on there. We're all over social media, y'all. We're on the Google Plus thing also. And as I mentioned, we're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. A lot of great stuff on the website right now. We sent out a very special thank you to all of our listeners and readers and subscribers. At the turn of the new year, basically just showing our appreciation to you guys. Like Pac said, you are appreciated. You know what I'm saying? We really appreciate everything that you guys bring to the table for Hip Hop Sports Report, because you guys are the reason why we keep pushing. This is why we keep doing this, man, because we get our word out. We have a lot to say, but it's you guys that make us go. And without our readers and our listeners, we would be nothing, man. So thank you very much to each and every one of you that have been doing that. The thing that you can do to help out the podcast as best you can is please spread that word, y'all. Please go ahead and like and share any type of article that you see on there. Share the podcast with anybody that you know. Tell your mama, tell your grandmama, tell your auntie, tell your cousins, tell your barber, tell your accountant. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't really matter. Just whoever you know that's interested in sports and hip-hop music, this is where they need to be tuning in. So we appreciate you guys. Have a great show lined up for this Thursday evening. Very special guest who I have been in contact with for a little while now, and my apologies to him, because we were supposed to be we should have done this podcast a long time ago, because we had been in talks for a while, but you know, I had some stuff pop up, some life events that you guys already know about, and so it kind of got delayed towards the back half of last year, but we're glad to bring him on. He is he's a member of Sideline Sports. He writes for that. He also has his own website known as the DCHendrixExperience.com. He's a co-founder of that and Sideline Sports, and he has a Saturday show on ESPN Radio 1380 in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Please give it up, y'all, for Mr. DC Hendrix. DC, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, man. Good looking on the intro. I'm glad to finally be here, man.
Woo! No doubt, man. Did I pub everything correctly? If I didn't, go ahead and correct me right now.
Oh, no, nah, man. You nailed it right on the head. You hit all of them.
Nice, nice. So, what we wanted to do is DC, I wanted to get you on the show, man. And I really wanted to talk hip-hop first, because it's been a little bit since we talked hip-hop on the podcast. 2015 just concluded. And I wanted to get your thoughts, man, on what was some of the best stuff you heard in the calendar year of 2015 on the hip-hop side of things. So, and we're going to get into a little bit of baseball talk after that. But for starting off in the music world, like, hip-hop was, it was a funny year, 2015, I felt like. I mean, I felt like it was a good year in the sense that we saw a lot of well-known, well-respected artists come back, drop projects, you know, some older cats that have been around in the game for a long time got back in the booth and did some things. Cats like Ludacris and Jadakiss, and you know, then we had obviously the cats that are running the day and ruling the day right now, the Drakes, the Futures, the Big Shines, and those types of guys. We had a lot of mixtapes drop out. I don't know what in particular caught your ear, but I figured we'd just go ahead and ask, man. I mean, what was the best album or mixtape that you heard in 2015?
Oh, man. First of all, I'd have to agree. There was definitely a lot of great rap music, hip-hop music that came out last year. There's so many, man. To be honest with you, the best album, in my opinion, that I heard last year, It had to be Future's Dirty Sprite too, man. You know, on the terms of, you know, overall quality, I feel like he put a lot of effort and work into that album. There's other albums that are close up there, though. You know, Big Sean's album was up there, had to be. ASAP Rocky's album was good. And, you know, obviously Kendrick Lamar's How to Pimp a Butterfly has to be up there as well. But just me personally, I just feel, and basically based off the hip hop that I listen to, you know, I'm a little bit of the new school. So I'm rocking with Future right now, to be honest. And the Dirty Sprite 2 to me was the best album overall in 2015. The best mixtape. A little bit more difficult. I mean, I'm going to have to say, overall best mixtape, I hate to say Future was in both of them, but I have to say Future 56 Nights was the best mixtape of 2015, but obviously it's the same as the albums. A lot of great mixtapes out there last year as well.
You said a lot right then, and I want to point out that in addition to naming Future for both of them, which I don't really have a problem with, but the fact that you said that you're a little bit of the new school, you know what I'm saying? Now, it's different for different folks, you know what I'm saying? And one thing that we do when we do our Tale of the Tapes, and shout out to Anthony Houston, he has our most recent Tale of the Tape article on HipHopSportsSupport.com, that being for Jadakiss's album, the Top 5 Dead or Alive joint. But, you know, great cats, album. Yeah, and cats that came up, like in my era, like I get the impression I'm a little older than you, but I'm not a lot older than you, I don't think. But when I was coming up, you know, Jada was one of the most revered lyricists in the game, and people really gravitated to his brand of music. And one thing that Anthony put in his review of that album was just that Jadakiss is bringing something to the table that those people in their 30s and 40s are missing right now in hip hop, because you're not getting the same type of music from Jadakiss that you're getting from Future. And so Future, while I respect what Future does, and I very much respect his hustle, because his hustle is almost unparalleled in the game right now, his brand of music doesn't speak to me as much as a lot of other people's does. So, so I guess what I'm saying is that, like, in a gun to my head situation, you know, it would be hard pressed for me to pick any single album for album of the year this past year, because to be quite frank, I don't think that one album stood head and shoulders above the rest this year. But I don't think, if I had to choose, I'm pretty certain I would not be choosing Dirty Sprite 2, because Dirty Sprite 2, just like I said, just the content of the music, the first track off, he's talking about hitting your chick in some Gucci flip-flops or whatever. Like, that's what Future is. That's the type of music that he makes. And, like, for me, you know, I mean, it just doesn't grab me the way that a lot of other artists' music would grab me. So again, I'm not knocking your choices. I think that that's right there. And I'll actually do you one better and say that I think March Madness was in the conversation for Song of the Year. As far as Song of the Year, like Rap Song of the Year, I think it was a two-song race, as far as I'm concerned. And this is, I mean, primarily we're talking about either really popular songs or singles, basically. But generally, if I had to pick those two songs that I was talking about, I'm thinking March Madness, which I think was on the 56 Nights mixtape. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So March Madness by Future, and then the other joint was Blessings, Big Sean. I feel like Blessings was probably the other top song of the year. Like, when I think back on 2015, 2 or 3 years from now, those are the two songs that are going to stand out to me. But again, it's to each his own, man, and that's why we have those different categories when we do our Tale of the Tape reviews, because when we do the reviews, each there's subgenres within hip-hop, right? So each artist does things a little bit differently, and they bring something different to the table. But I mean, where do you fall as far as Song of the Year? I mean, is it March Madness for you also? Is it a clean sweep for Future right now, DC?
No, there's no way it's a clean sweep. I just, you know, just last year, that's the first rapper that comes to my mind, you know, 2015. I just feel like he owned it. But in terms of song, I don't have any Future song even towards the top, but I definitely have to agree with Big Sean, Blessings. That has to be up there. I mean, this is Hip Hop Sports Report, so we can bring some sports in, you know, with Stephen Curry's daughter singing that during the press conference in the finals last year. You know, that song had a big meaning to it. You know, it touched a lot more than just hip hop, which is why that has to be considered song of the year. But number one song, I have to say, from last year has to be Kendrick Lamar, All Right. I feel like that song, you know, stands out to me as it has to be the best song. You know, he's, you know, with all the killings, unfortunately, that we're seeing with, you know, with police and, you know, black on black crimes, you know, All Right to me has to be 2015 song of the year, just the meaning behind it.
I like that choice a lot. That was one of my favorite songs off To Pimp a Butterfly. And I mean, here's my thing with Kendrick, man. And I might be stepping on a future article a little bit when I say this, but two things. And number one, I agree that All Right was a dope record, and I liked To Pimp a Butterfly as an album, as a complete work. I find it troublesome that I don't see myself going back and listening to that 10 months later as much as I would like to believe that I would back when it came out. Does that make sense? So, like, I'm not, you know, like, if I'm driving in the car, or if I'm, you know, just looking for something to play on my iTunes or whatever, or looking for something to put on my phone or whatever, I'm not checking for To Pimp a Butterfly. Like it's a great artistic work, you know what I'm saying? But I don't find myself going back to it that often. Like, the replay ability of it, like, once we kind of cycled through it, or at least I should say me, once I cycled through it and got to the point where I felt like I had a firm grasp on everything that he was talking about, understood all the metaphors and everything, and sufficiently vibed to All Right enough times, and you know what I mean, then it was kind of like, all right, what else is out there? Like, but I don't, you know, when Kendrick's first record came out, you know, his first major release debut came out, I was constantly playing that back for a long time, and I still do to this day. I still listen to Section 80 a lot, but I don't find myself listening to Pimp a Butterfly a lot. I just don't.
Yeah, I feel you on. I definitely have to agree to a certain extent. I do have a little bit of a problem with how much people are, you know, we can use hip hop language, so I'm gonna say gassing. Like, I feel like his album was really gassed, which means forced, you know, to the public. How to Pimp a Butterfly was a good album. It was a good album, but there's no way that it should have been winning as many awards as it already has, like Album of the Year and Grammy nominated, and pretty much expected to sweep in the Grammys. And I just don't, you know, it was like I said, I like All Right. You know, I will say the single All Right is a great song, which is why I picked it as Song of the Year last year. But overall, I have to agree with the album. You know, it was a good album, but honestly, I don't listen to the whole album today either. You know, I listened to a couple songs off of it, but All Right is pretty much the only one I listen to off that album. So I pretty much agree, man, about Kendrick Lamar and the album overall.
I just feel like when we heard Kendrick a few years ago on the Control remix, and he just ate up Big Sean on his own record and then just, like, bodied everybody in the industry, basically, right?
Yeah.
That got people excited, right? And people, I felt like, really believed that we were going to see this animalistic kind of Kendrick Lamar just coming for cats' necks constantly, all the time. And that's the dude that we were going to see 24/7. But what ended up happening was that's not what we've seen since then. Like, since the Control freestyle, it's been Kendrick kind of laying back, working on his project independently, and then putting out this, again, this very, very artistic kind of work that had a great message to it, but didn't really, it wasn't aggressive by any means. You know what I'm saying? The one rapper that Kendrick Lamar probably came at the hardest on To Pimp a Butterfly was Kendrick Lamar. Like he was self-critical to the nth degree on that record, but he didn't, and not to say that he needed to call out a bunch of guys by name, but I mean, he just wasn't all that aggressive, and I think that's what people really wanted to see from him. And so we've seen this more of a reserved type dude now that's really more so focused on the art and the message, which is, again, that's great. But I felt like it was a little bit of a bait and switch going on there, right?
Yeah. That is exactly the way I feel it. How I feel about that album. You pretty much nailed it. You just said it in a different way that, you know, makes a little bit more sense. You basically got my point across. I agree, man. I agree.
Now, when you talk about the artists that ruled 2015, and we already talked a lot about Future, you can't go into, you can't talk about Future without talking about Drake anymore, right? No. I think if there's going to be one producer that ruled 2015, and there's a different producer that steps up every year, it seems like, and at the most, that producer has like a 2 or 3 year run where their sound just rules hip hop, and then they step to the side, and then a new guy comes along. It's almost like in the NFL how there's always like a new trendy lockdown corner in the NFL every couple of years. Like every couple of years, it's a new dude.
Right.
First it's Champ Bailey, then it's Revis. Then it's, you know, Aqib Talib or whoever. Then it's Chris Harris is getting buzzed. Then you see, Patrick Peterson or somebody like that. Now Josh Norman's got the baton, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's always a new dude that's coming up and getting those accolades. I left out Richard Sherman, too. But, like, it seems like you don't see a one guy sustain that title as the top defensive back in the league, because the next year there's always another... there's always another Johnny come lately that's like that gets everybody's attention. So I feel the same way about producers. Metro Boomin was definitely the producer of 2015 for his work that he did primarily with Future. But as far as rappers, you can't talk Future without talking about Drake. But we already talked about Kendrick. Cole had a great year. Big Sean had an amazing year, and I feel like ascended to a new level within hip-hop. Like, he went from stardom to superstardom almost. We saw him performing in his hometown on Thanksgiving at halftime. That was awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of other artists, too, that had great years. But if I had to guess, I would guess that you would say the Future was the artist of the year. Is that fair to say or no?
Oh, man, that's so difficult. You know, what makes it so difficult is because, you know, if we're analyzing this category based off lyrics, Future would not even be in the discussion. Lyrically, Future can't touch a lot of rappers that, you know, that are in the game, which I will definitely admit. But so in considering artist of the year, man, it's so difficult. Honestly, and the reason why I say it's difficult is because the person I feel like that is the best hip hop artist really didn't do a whole lot in 2015, technically. And that's J. Cole, because Forest Hills Drive was technically 2014. So, you know, to me, honestly, still, I mean,
well, Cole's album dropped late enough to where I think it still counts. It came out like December last year, so I think it counts.
Yeah. So that's what makes it difficult. So technically speaking, it wasn't in 2015, but man, I honestly have to say, artist has to be J. Cole. I feel like nobody in 2015 took that leap to superstardom more than J. Cole did. You know, before that, we knew he had talent. You know, everybody knew J. Cole could spit. But after Forest Hills Drive, which I feel personally was one of the best hip-hop albums I've heard in at least the last 5 or so years, I'd say J. Cole has to be, you know, the top artist in the game right now.
You think Forest Hills Drive is one of the best albums you heard in the last 5 years?
Yeah, man. You know, honestly, it's not the best, but it's up there for me, man. Just all the way through, not even having to think about skipping a song, the message he has in every song, you know, the storytelling. J. Cole, to me, with that album, I feel like he took that leap, man. Superstardom.
I would disagree with you a little bit on that. I feel like Cole's record is actually I listen to J. Cole's record all the time. I listen to Forest Hill Drive all the time to this day. I don't have the problem with that record that I did with Kendrick's record. That's not an issue. However, what I find myself doing is I find myself listening to only specific songs off Forest Hill Drive. So I listen to the intro, and then I listen to January 28th, and then, you know, some of the other songs after that. Like, you know, I didn't care for the production so much on, I think it was, what was it, Fire Squad was the one where he kind of said some controversial stuff. I think, like, the production on that was kind of weak to me personally.
Dang.
I really like, you know what I liked? I liked the more easy listening, like, songs on that record. So I love the intro. I love January 28th. I love Saint-Tropez. And I love Don't Save Her, She Don't Want to Be Saved. What was the name of that record? It escapes me right now.
But No Role Models.
Thank you. No Role Models. I love that song. And the one right after that, I think, was like Apparently. That one was all right. But yeah, like, aside from those, like, that's like maybe one third of the album, or maybe a little more than one third of the album. Like, the rest of the songs, to me, I could live without personally. And so, again, I'm not saying that sounds harsh. I mean, I wrote a review on it. It's on the website. I gave it a good review. I thought the album was good. But I guess I just view it a little bit differently than you do. And it just, as an entire body of work, it did not grab me in that same way. If I were to make a distinction as to who was the rapper of the year in 2015, I think hands down, without a doubt, it is Drake. And some people like Drake, some people don't. Some people make fun of Drake. He's an easy target, and I get that, you know. He's a really easy target to make fun of sometimes. But to me, when you combine the lyricism, first of all, and let me just say this too, I wasn't even all that enthralled by If You're Reading This Is Too Late. I thought that had some holes in it. Like, I didn't think that album was as good as people made it out to be, whether or not it was an album or mixtape, whatever you want to call it. I didn't think that was great. I thought it had some very good songs on there, but I didn't think it was as good as people made it out to be. I thought people gassed that record up. And then What a Time to Be Alive came out, and it was a little bit of the same thing. But the point is that Drake had the ear of the people more than anybody else. In the wintertime, February, he came out with If You're Reading This Is Too Late. It's basically a breakup letter with Cash Money, is how I took it. And everybody was playing that pretty much all the way up until like Dirty Sprite 2 came out, like in Kendrick, and you know what I'm saying, Kendrick came out after that, but then like Dirty Sprite 2 came out, and then once the rumblings came that they were gonna do a project together, Future and Drake, and I think that came out maybe around September or something like that, What a Time to Be Alive, and then everybody was rocking out to that for the last half of the year. And in the middle of that was the Meek Mill beef, and Drake obviously destroyed Meek Mill, and his career has not been the same since. And Meek Mill was a respected artist. Meek Mill can rhyme. Like, I also wrote a piece on the website about how I felt like the hate for Meek Mill kind of went too far. Meek can actually rhyme, y'all, but nobody wants to hear what he has to say anymore because they lost all respect for him. And then when that video of him boxing came out, it was just over with. You know what I'm saying? Because the guy looks like, I mean, like, that was some of the worst hands I've ever seen in my life. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not a fighter. I'm not a violent cat, but I've been watching boxing my whole life, and that was atrocious.
We caught him during his warm-up.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. And so, but the point is that when you combine Drake's influence, you know, what he's done away from the booth, when you look at the two projects that he put out last year, the success that those things had, and I left that Hotline Bling, right? That was probably the video of the year. Everybody was, you know, talking about that video. There was a Vine or some type of, you know, parody of that video for the rest of the year after that came out. You could make I didn't love that song, but you could make an argument that was up there for record of the year, even though it technically wasn't a rap song. So the point being that Drake put out two projects that were major successes. He got a whole bunch of Grammy nominations. He had arguably the video of the year, and he had one of the most memorable rap beefs in recent years, and he destroyed a legitimate worthy adversary in that beef. And so I can make the argument that the back-to-back record wasn't even all that great. Like, those of us that know the history of beef records and stuff like that, and diss records, it doesn't stack up to No Vaseline and to, you know, to Ether or nothing like that, but it was still fun, and we enjoyed it. And so when you look at those things combined, you take all those things into account, I feel like it's Drake hands down.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with that, man, to be honest with you. Personally, I'm a huge Drake fan. I've been listening to him pretty much since So Far Gone. I've been listening to him for a while. And he definitely took, you know, we keep talking about making those leaps. And Drake was pretty much already a superstardom, so we really can't say he took a leap. But I will say he definitely took, you know, attempted, if he didn't. You know, a lot of people will say that he took control of the game, which is very, very arguable at this point. You know, it's, you know, like you said, with all the diss record that's Grammy nominated, the only diss track to ever do that. I know that's, you know, like you just said, you know, to true hip hop heads altogether, it probably wasn't, you know, the greatest diss record ever. It probably doesn't deserve a Grammy nominated. You know, we can make arguments that, like you said, Ether could be Grammy nominated. Even Second Round Knockout, we can go farther back than that with Cannabis. I feel like Cannabis diss record was better than Back to Back. But, you know, like I said, Drake, you know, overall, though, Drake, I can't disagree. You know, Hotline Bling, arguably, like you said, track of the year. If Reading This Is Too Late, Grammy nominated, which you can make the argument it wasn't even an album. It was technically a mixtape. So, you know, Drake had a great year. I think basically what everybody's waiting for, though, which was pretty much what everybody was waiting for last year, 2015. Where's Views of the Six?
Yep. And Views for the Six is probably the most highly anticipated record right now in hip hop. And I feel like there was a long time, you know, maybe this might have lasted like close to 10 or 15 years, man. But like, there was nobody that people ran to their computers more quickly to hear a verse from than Jay-Z. Jay-Z was that dude. Like, oh, there's a new whole verse out? Oh, let me hear this. Like, you immediately drop whatever you were doing and you press play.
Yeah.
I don't think that Jay-Z has that title anymore. That title belongs to Drake. Drake, I mean, there's nobody else that most rap fans want to hear more of more frequently than Drake. And even over Kendrick Lamar, even over J. Cole, if Drake drops a 16 or if Drake puts out a song, you know, even Kanye West, people, his lunacy, you know what I'm saying? Him being who he is, he puts out that Nike diss record at the end of the year that was garbage as far as I'm concerned. you know what I'm saying? Like, it just wasn't that good. And so after that, it's just kind of like, Drake's standing alone right now. I think he's in a league of his own, and I don't think there's anybody else that will attract your attention more quickly when you hear that there's a new song, or Twitter blows up more over a Drake verse than any other artist. You know what I'm saying? And I think that counts. I think that counts for something.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I agree. Overall, it was just, you know, just me personally, I just said J. Cole just because I feel like, you know, right now in the game, I don't feel like anybody lyrically is better than him. You know, I'm just being honest. I just feel his lyrics are untouched right now in the hip hop game. And, you know, honestly, either way, you can have one out of these three guys. You can have Drake, J. Cole, or Kendrick Lamar. And I feel like you can't go wrong either way with any of those three.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I feel like those three guys are at the apex of the industry right now. I personally just think Drake has separated himself in 2015 just a bit, and I feel like until further notice, he's got the title. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit while I have you on the Your Ad Here hotline. That's what we call it, the Your Ad Here hotline, because we're still looking for sponsorship, y'all. So if y'all know somebody that got a little dough, you know what I'm saying? You want to have them throw me something, and then we'll plug them on the website, you know? But on the podcast, I should say. But as long as I have you, DC, I wanted to talk a little Baseball Hall of Fame. Baseball Hall of Fame is always it's a goofy process, man. Like, I don't even really like it, but it's what we have now, and it is what it is. But I know you're a baseball fan, and I wanted to get your take on the induction of Ken Griffey Jr. yesterday, who was on 437 of a possible 440 ballots, which was the highest first ballot percentage of all time. And Mike Piazza, the catcher, who also made it in, I think, on his second or third try. I believe it was second try. So those two guys are the class. That's it, just those two guys. And I wanted to get your take on that and the exclusion of some other notable names. What was your takeaway from that?
Well, one, I take nothing from Ken Griffey Jr. One thing I will say, though, man, do I feel old. There's nothing else that can make you feel old than seeing somebody you grew up watching getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. I feel so old seeing that, man. It kind of depressed me, but taking nothing from that, man, you know, barring injuries throughout his career, we could be talking about the greatest home run hitter of all time, greatest hitter of all time, obviously. Ken Griffey Jr., we all know, you know, sustained a lot of injuries and still put up one of the greatest careers we've seen. And, you know, he's fully deserved of that Hall of Fame. I do have a problem with Mike Piazza getting in. Tremendous talent. I take nothing from him either. One of the best catchers we had in baseball history. But there's no way. There's no way you have a baseball Hall of Fame. And I'm sure you're going to ask me this, but I'll just make this statement and I'll leave it alone. There's no way you should have a baseball Hall of Fame without the all-time hits leader Pete Rose in it or the all-time home run leader Barry Bonds in it. Case closed.
Well, okay, a couple things. First of all, I agree with you wholeheartedly about Junior Griffey, because when I became a baseball fan, Ken Griffey Jr. was on top. You know what I'm saying? So he was the man. And He brought a swag to the game. He had the cleats, the kicks that people still rock to this day. That I actually don't own a pair of Griffies, but I absolutely would if I could. I think my brother has a few pairs, and you know what I'm saying, I might if I would have probably swiped them from him already if my shoe size wasn't the same as his, but were the same as his rather. But I mean, and the other thing I remember about Griffey growing up was the Ken Griffey Jr. baseball for Super Nintendo. That was mid 90s. That was a dope video game, and that was one of those games that had like the likeness of a lot of major leaguers for each team. You know, like, you know, if you play with the Texas Rangers, you know, there was a swole Latino dude that hit a bunch of home runs for the Texas Rangers. Like, oh, I'm pretty sure that's Juan Gonzalez. You know what I'm saying? Like that's how that was back then. Like, I don't think I had him by name. But you know, right. if there's a big muscle head dude that's for the White Sox, you know that's the Big Hurt, you know. But that was one of the more fun baseball games that I can remember, and that was Ken Griffey Jr. all day long, man. He had his own flair that he brought to the game, the athleticism in center field, and the most beautiful looking swing, a swing that would bring tear to your eyes. You know what I'm saying? Like all that stuff. And I agree with what you said about the injuries too. That Griffey might be underrated, actually, if possible, given his Gold Glove ability in center field and all the home runs and stuff and RBIs that he left on the table, considering his injuries. I don't know what your beef is with Mike Piazza. I feel like you just called him one of the best catchers of all time, but then said he doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, so I'm a little miffed by that. You care to explain that a little bit?
Just because... I just feel like, you know, even with him being one of the best catchers ever, they need to put Bonds and Rose in, man, at least Rose. There's no way. You know, me being a former baseball player, you know, I played at the semi-pro level. I played for minor leagues. I've done that. There's no way that steroids make you hit 760-plus home runs, man. There's no response for that. I don't care what it took, man. Honestly, it still takes much more than that to hit a baseball, and for him to hit that many home runs and have the most home runs ever, he should be in the Hall of Fame. You can't have a Hall of Fame and not have the best players in it. The all-time hit leader Pete Rose, who didn't even cheat while he was playing, isn't in the Hall of Fame. Like, I just feel, honestly, just me personally, you know, me being just talking general sports fan wise, you know, just. It's almost a joke, in my opinion. You know, you have a Hall of Fame, but you don't have two of the greatest players to ever play in it. Doesn't make any sense to me.
I get that. So it doesn't sound like you have a beef with Mike Piazza. It sounds like your beef is more so just with these other guys that came from his same era that are getting in. Okay. Right. Well, here's the thing, man. Like, these guys broke rules, especially Pete Rose. I mean, and I always felt like that let me backtrack. Barry Bonds, I think he admitted to doing the cream and the clear or whatever that stuff was called back in the day. You can't look at him and tell that he didn't use some type of performance-enhancing drug. Now, he would have made the Hall of Fame before he ever did steroids. Like, Pittsburgh Pirates and early Giants Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer anyway. He didn't need to do what he did to make it to Cooperstown. But I think we would both agree that it looked like he did something. And he started hitting 73 home runs. That's a bit absurd. And he's shattering records. And granted, you know, baseball is one of those sports where every generation has their own little tricks and stuff like that. But this guy's shattering records of Henry Aaron, who we know did not use those type of supplements. Seems a little unfair that he would be as heralded after their careers are over as Henry Aaron would, or that he would get the same type of placement that Hank Aaron would, right? I mean, like, you can't circumvent the rules to that extent and then expect to get the same treatment post playing career. I feel like that's a pretty fair thing. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, in my defense to that though, you know, okay, if that's the case, if we're just doing, you know, comparing him to other guys that he passed on the home run list, then why not just have an asterisk next to the home run all time stat? He's still, like you said though, he's still a Hall of Famer regardless of him being home run king. So why not put him in the Hall of Fame regardless then? Just put an asterisk next to his home run record.
You know what? That's something that could be absolutely done. I don't think that there's a clear-cut answer to this question. Like, I don't feel like... I'm not a hard-line guy on the Hall of Fame issue. I'm not. Like, I don't draw a line in the sand and say, no, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa will never, ever get in or should never, ever get in. I don't necessarily feel that strongly, and I don't feel as strongly as to say, let them all in and sort them out later, or put them in a special wing of Cooperstown and have it be the steroid wing. And if you look at it from an aerial view, it looks like a giant syringe from a satellite view. Like, I don't feel that strongly about it. I just don't. So, I mean, the asterisk thing, like, a lot of people have suggested that over the years. Sure, you know, whatever. I don't care, to be honest, because I feel like the Hall of Fame thing is so flawed anyways. Like, why, like, they put such an emphasis on who's a first ballot, who's a second ballot. Why are there varying degrees of a Hall of Famer? You're in the Baseball Hall of Fame. It shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter when you get in. Like, you get in when you get in, but you're all in the same family. It's not like when you make the NFL Hall of Fame and you make it in, and like the first ballot NFL Hall of Famers get the beige Canton jacket, and then everybody else gets a different color jacket when they get in because they weren't in on the first try. That's ridiculous. They're all Hall of Famers. They all get the same damn jacket. So I don't see why we need to try to parcel out the Baseball Hall of Fame to this degree. You have guys that are on the baseball ballot for five, six, 7 years, and then they get into the Hall of Fame. And it's like, why? Like, so what changed? This guy hasn't played in 15 years. So what changed between last year and this year that he wasn't a Hall of Famer last year and now he's a Hall of Famer this year? Why is it that Mike Piazza was not a Hall of Famer last year, but he is a Hall of Famer this year? What happened? Like, he didn't hit any more home runs. So, you know, I just don't. I think the whole Hall of Fame process is a little jacked up, to be honest. But Pete Rose, going back to him real quick. I mean, the dude lied, man. Like, I mean, his case, I was always actually a proponent that he should get in, because it's not like he was using some type of drugs to enhance his performance or anything like that. You know, he was just Charlie Hustle, and he hit a lot of baseballs, and he got a lot of base hits, over 4,000 of them, which is an insane, insane number of hits when you step back and look at the rest of baseball history, you know, 120 years of baseball history or whatever, and he's got by far the most hits. Like, it's insane. But he lied about what he did, like he was vehement. He vehemently denied those allegations for years and years and years, and then just what, within the last 2 years or whatever, he just turns around and says, "Yeah, I did do a little gambling. Yeah, I bet on my team a little bit." Like, wait a minute, what happened to the last 25 years when you denied this up and down? Like, there has to be some type of repercussion for that. The commissioner of baseball who put the lifetime ban on Pete Rose died right after he did it, and that kind of screwed Pete Rose over a little bit. But when you lie, you know, the cover up, they say the cover up is worse than the crime. Like, I'm a PR guy, you know what I'm saying? Like, the cover up, I personally don't necessarily believe that the cover up is always worse than the crime, but the cover up damn sure doesn't help. And so when Pete Rose stands here and denies these allegations for 2 decades, and then because he's writing a book, decides to flip the script, I'm cool. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm cool. Like, yeah. you made your bed, you kind of got to lie in it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm with you, man, and I'm glad that you sorted the differences before you even, you know, gave your opinion on both of them, which I really like, you know, because they're two different completely situations, you know, Bonds and Rose, and, you know, everybody looks at them differently, you know, and honestly, I still feel they should both be in, you know, just because, just based off the fact, one, you know, Pete Rose lied, but, you know, he wasn't a player. As a player, he's a Hall of Famer, and Barry Bonds, Hall of Famer regardless, before he jacked up and gained 100 pounds of muscle. So I just feel like they're Hall of Famers, and it's next to a joke without two of the greatest players of all time not in the Hall of Fame. That'd be like, I'm trying to think of a comparison. I really can't. Because
baseball's okay. Unique. It's its own Brady. Thing.
Tom Brady. The Deflategate crap. He shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame because of that?
Well, you're striking a chord with me now because you're talking to a huge Tom Brady supporter. And I know. and well, I mean the Deflategate, I think that's a totally different animal for a lot of reasons. I mean, to your point, yes, he should still be allowed in the Hall of Fame if the NFL actually found that he did anything wrong, which they didn't because they never had any evidence, and right. They persecuted him regardless. And they never had any evidence of any wrongdoing. But then again, even if he did do it, the impact that that has on the game is minuscule. Like, you cannot tell me that he won all these games and threw all these touchdowns because they took a sliver of air out of a football. That's ridiculous. Like, nobody with a brain can draw that conclusion. The only people that try to draw that conclusion are Tom Brady haters, basically. So, so I think that there's a big difference between that and bulking up to the point that where you hit a pop fly can of corn to left center and it just happens to go over the fence. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think that that's the same thing. But I want to ask you then, do you feel that Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and Roger Clemens and Palmeiro and all those guys should get into?
Not necessarily. And I only say that because they don't have the most home runs or most hits ever. So I feel like if you have the most anything ever, you're in the Hall of Fame. I don't give a damn what it is. I don't care.
So we're making progress here. So it sounds as though that you don't feel so strongly as what you're saying about the steroid era. Your beef isn't with the steroid era. It's just the fact that those two guys happen to be the most prolific at a few different statistics in baseball history. Home runs, I think Pete Rose is leader in hits and possibly RBIs or hits and something else.
Yep.
But yep. So I mean, like, that's where your beef lies. Your beef doesn't lie with these steroid guys all need to get in. Because to me, it's like, well, then I don't see how you could allow Barry Bonds to get in and then not allow Mark McGwire. Like, Mark McGwire has like 560 home runs. He saved the sport damn near in 1998. And he, like Barry Bonds, was probably Hall of Fame bound before he ever did anything like this.
Well, I didn't, like you said, though, I didn't necessarily say I wouldn't let him in. I was just, like you said, my beef is with Bonds and Rose not being in. So I really, of course, I'm not going to have any problem with McGwire getting in. He only has 100 or so less than Barry Bonds does. So it's really not, it really wouldn't be a big deal if he got in. Roger Clemens, with pitchers, it's a little bit different. It's hard because, like, personally, I really don't pay a whole lot of attention to the pitchers necessarily. I was a hitter, man. When I played baseball, I was a DH, so that's what I concentrate on. And just based off that, I know how hard it is to hit a baseball. I know how hard it is to hit a home run. And, you know, I just feel a little bit differently towards guys like Bonds and Rose, who did it so great and so consistently. And obviously with them leading all time, I just, you know, and like you said, McGwire, he has to be in as well. So I just feel this whole Hall of Fame process, it's just weird, to be honest with you. I just don't get it. I don't get it at all.
I would agree. I think the Hall of Fame stuff, like I said, it's bizarre to me how baseball has its own set of rules and they just stick to it. And it's kind of unflinching. And it's just a bunch of old dudes in their old sport doing their old dude thing. and they I think I saw somebody on TV today said that they treat it like a country club. And that's kind of what it is. It's just like, oh, we like you. We're going to hold this grudge. It's almost like WWF or I guess what's called WWE now. WWF when I was coming up, but they had their Hall of Fame and their Hall of Fame, Vince McMahon runs the Hall of Fame because he runs the league or the federation, right? But Vince McMahon, whoever he had a grudge with, like outside of wrestling, like outside, like off camera, whoever he had a vendetta with or a beef with, those guys didn't make the Hall of Fame. And it wasn't until they mended fences with Vince and the McMahon family that they got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And that's kind of what this is. It's just like you got some people at the top that are trying to exercise and wield this little bit amount of power that they have and try to control history. But history writes itself, man. Like, and especially now these days, it's all documented. We're not talking about Ty Cobb, you know what I'm saying? Like there's video footage of all of this stuff. Like, we've seen Mark McGwire, we've seen Sammy Sosa, we saw Sammy Sosa hit 60 home runs 3 years in a row. Like, we know that what he's capable of. So, I don't know. I feel like if you're going to let one of those guys in, you got to let them all in, I kind of feel like. But I'm not even saying that that's the solution necessarily, but I don't know that you can kind of break it up and divvy it up. You know, and then you got guys like, you know, Big Poppy. I think Big Poppy got knocked for something once, right? But now nobody seems to care now. He was a DH like you, but nobody seems to care now. People love Big Poppy. Like, and it's like, oh, yeah, absolutely. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the greatest designated hitter of all time. And it's like, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, he probably is. But it's like, you know, I think he got knocked for something, too. So it's like we're going to make exceptions for him and not other people. I don't know. It's just a bizarre set of circumstances. But I know you got a role, DC, man. So thanks for dropping by the preseason podcast of the year, man. Go ahead and plug all your stuff one more time before you get out of here.
Oh, first of all, no problem, man. Thanks for having me. Glad we finally got to get it done. I'll keep it short. You know, just follow me on Twitter at DC Hendrix. Check out my new website, the DCHendrixExperience.com, where you can stream my show as well. On there, all my hip hop stories. Check out my sports website, SidelineSportsReport.com. And, you know, other than that, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it, man.
Yep. And then ESPN Fort Wayne also, right?
Yes, sir. ESPN 1380, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Check me out every Saturday, 10 to 11 a.m.
No doubt, man. Thank you for stopping by. Preseason podcast of the year, man. Take it easy. We'll do it again sometime.
For sure, man. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you once again, my man DC Hendrix, for dropping by. Preseason podcast of the year. Very good dude. Very good segment. I like that. We don't talk enough baseball here on the podcast, man. But that was nice. And he's a former baseball player, and he had some thoughts he wanted to share about the Hall of Fame. We didn't quite see eye to eye on everything, but what you gonna do, man? The baseball thing doesn't make any sense, man. Like, the guy's a Hall of Famer this year, but he wasn't last year. Whatever. It's dumb. A couple other things I want to touch on before we get out of here this evening. First of all, college football playoff, obviously, is coming to a head on Monday night. So we have Clemson, Alabama. I recently got into it on Twitter with a SEC supporter over an article that I wrote this week that's basically said that the SEC is still overrated in spite of their dominance in bowl season this year. And so, as you guys probably know, the SEC is kicking ass in bowl season this year, right? They're like 6-2, I think, overall or something. Or no. Excuse me. They're like 8-2 overall. I think the SEC West is 6-1, and the conference overall is 8-2 with a possibility to go to 9-2 and rack up another national championship if Alabama wins on Monday. The only reason I'm bringing this up now is because the guy that I was interacting with, you know, he kind of said at one point, he says to me, like, I don't understand your point. And he rattled off all this stuff about how the SEC is done in the bowl season. The thing is this, you can't judge the bowl season. The bowl season can't be the only indicator that you have as to why a conference is dominant. It just doesn't add up. Like, you have one team in the SEC that's like 7-6 or whatever, and they beat a team from another conference that's 6-6, and all of a sudden, because they get a tally mark for that, that means they're better. I don't know if that's true. But beyond just that, as I pointed out in the column, last year, the SEC West, specifically, the SEC West, was trash in the bowl season. And they were like 1-5 or something like that. And the conference as a whole, their combined record was halfway decent, but it still wasn't anything like it should be, considering the SEC is supposed to be so much bigger and badder than every other conference, brother. So, if you believe that the SEC is the best conference because they're dominant this year in the bowl season, then you have to then subscribe to that same theory about last year, and therefore the SEC was overrated last year. And the problem with the SEC being overrated last year, if we're going to work on that premise, is that this year, every SEC team benefited from the belief that the SEC was awesome last year. So if the SEC is awesome this year because of their bowl record, then they must have been overrated last year. But what we saw was, coming into this year, all these SEC teams getting the benefit of the doubt in the polls based on previous history. And that's not acceptable. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. So what you have is, you see teams like LSU, for instance. LSU continues to climb up the ranks. LSU was a one-man team. Leonard Fournette is a beast. And outside of that, they're a pretty, like, average football team, right? Like, there wasn't anything else special about the Louisiana State Tigers, right? But they got all the way up to the number 2 team in the country just because they're located in the South. If they were the exact same team with the exact same players and they were located in California, they would not have been the number 2 team in the country. They would not have. You would not have seen Georgia make it all the way to number 8. You would not have seen Texas A&M make it all the way to number 9. So that's my thing. They overrate these teams, and then they, as a result, they have an inflated record, an inflated ranking. Then you have two SEC teams, but because they're in the SEC, they have an inflated ranking. They play one another One of them wins, of course, and then that team's ranking gets even more inflated because they beat a team with an inflated ranking. Do you guys see this? Do you guys understand what's happening here? So at the end of it, you have SEC teams that are getting automatically ranked higher just because they're in the South, and that's not okay. Like, and this whole notion that, you know, football's just different in the South. Like, no, it's not. No, it's not. I'm from Ohio, dog. Like, you can't fool me. I know football. Football, they practically invented the sport in Ohio, as Tony Rizzo likes to say up in Cleveland. Like, they practically invented the sport down the street. That's why the Pro Football Hall of Fame is in Canton, Ohio. That's why every great football coach you can name probably has some kind of ties to Ohio or learned the game from somebody who has ties to Ohio. And that goes up to this day, period. Like, Nick Saban used to coach in Cleveland. Urban Meyer coaches Ohio State, got his start in Bowling Green, and is from Sandusky. He's from Ashtabula, I'm thinking of John Gruden's from Sandusky. But you have these coaches, man, like everybody, they all come out of Ohio. Like, Ohio produces all of the talent for Penn State, for Michigan State, for Michigan. You know, all those schools are made up of Ohio State rejects, basically. Guys that didn't get recruited by Ohio State, have a chip on their shoulder, they go to Michigan State. They go to Penn State. They go to Michigan. And then that's where they thrive. That's what they do. All the talent comes from Ohio. All the talent for the Pittsburgh Steelers all comes out of Ohio State. Like, that's just how they draft. Because Ohio knows football. Like, that's just what it is. So, I know the game, man. Like, there's... Just because it's in the Big Ten, and maybe some of the players are slower in the Big Ten, doesn't mean that the level of play is automatically worse than these guys that are in the South just because they're from the South. Like, that's nonsense. So, you know, I don't buy that. And we see SEC players go into the NFL and fail all the time. And the ones that I referenced on Twitter, I said where Glenn Dorsey was a bust, Jamarcus Russell was a bust. Jadeveon Clowney to this point is a bust. Who was more hyped than Jadeveon Clowney coming out of South Carolina? Nobody was more hyped than that dude coming out of school. He was hyped coming out the year before he came out. And what has he done since he's been in the league 2 years? Nothing. So just because you're from the SEC doesn't necessarily mean you're awesome. Ask Trent Richardson. You know what I mean? But people just share this belief that because they're in the South, that automatically it's their birthright to get ranked higher than these other universities. And I just don't agree with that. Like, you have to earn it on the field. So I felt that even Alabama, their resume did not stack up to some of these other schools that were vying for the college football playoff. Ultimately, I understood why they got in, because they won the SEC and they're Alabama, so I get it. But they proved me wrong. I got to give Bama a little credit here. They proved me wrong when they went out and waxed Michigan State, in spite of the fact that that game was actually pretty close in the first half. It probably should have been 10-7 at halftime had Connor Cook not gotten picked off for that ridiculous decision. If he throws a touchdown pass on that drive and it's 10-7 going into the break, I think we have an entirely different second half. But the second half is when the doors got blown off, because Michigan State was sitting there doubting themselves in the locker room. That's personally what I believe. Not to say that Michigan State was great, because if they were great, they would have scored a point. You know what I'm saying? And I was mad watching that game that Ohio State lost to those guys, because they made the entire conference look bad. But I think it would have been a different ball game because had they scored it on that last drive in the first half, because that first half was close. The first half of Michigan State and Alabama was very competitive, but it just happened to be 10-0 at the break. And then the final score is like 38-0. And then everybody laughs at Michigan State. So you got to give Bama some credit. I'm here to give Bama some credit. I'm picking Clemson to win the game on Monday, because I still buy into the fact that Alabama was not that battle tested this year, and that I didn't believe in the SEC as a conference. And I think that you can also, it's not crazy to make the connection that maybe the SEC played so well in these bowl games because they had a little extra incentive, because they all take this conference pride thing very seriously down there, and they got embarrassed last year, and so they came into each of their individual bowls with a lot more something to play for than a lot of these other schools. I feel like, I mean, like it wasn't as big of a deal because the SEC is constantly on trial. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 and the whatever, they're not on trial to the extent that the SEC is, and so I think their players might have been a little bit more amped up for each of their individual bowl games, and so that may have had something to do with their performance this year. I don't know, but I think it's plausible anyway. But I still think Clemson's going to win the game. I think that Deshaun Watson is something that Bama has not seen this year. They haven't seen anything like that. I still believe that if you make Jake Coker beat you, you got a shot. Because if Clemson loads up to stop Derrick Henry, I don't see Alabama doing it against a team as good as Clemson. I just don't. So, and maybe they'll prove me wrong. And if they prove me wrong, I will get on the podcast, get on Twitter or whatever, and I will say I'm sorry, and I will plead forgiveness from Nick Saban and the rest of the Tuscaloosa community. I'll write a letter to their congressman or something and apologize. I don't know. But they have to do it, though. Like, to me, they haven't proved it yet. And they're getting this benefit based on what they've done in the past, which makes a little bit of sense for Alabama because Alabama has won a bunch of championships in recent years. The rest of these schools in the SEC, though, that are living off the work that Alabama does, I don't agree with that, but we see it every year. That's how Texas A&M makes it all the way up to 9th in the country, and it turns out that they were whacked this year. That's how Georgia makes it up to number 8, and they were just pretty good at best. I understand they lost Nick Chubb early, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of these teams in the SEC that they've never won a championship, but they're living off of the backs of Alabama and Florida and LSU, and then because they play them every year, all of a sudden that makes them better. That's not necessarily true. So anyways, one last thing I wanted to talk about real quick was this Tamir Rice situation with in Cleveland with LeBron. Why does it always seem like I always end up talking about the heavier stuff at the end of the podcast and I feel like I'm bringing everything down? I don't know why, but obviously you guys know about the Tamir Rice story, and it hits close to home for me personally as a Cleveland native. It also hits close to home to me personally because I'm a black male and I've been harassed by the police. It also hits close to home for me personally because I just gave birth to a son who is a black male and who will undoubtedly get harassed by the police when he gets older. And so I worry for him, and my wife does as well. But and it's a real thing in our community, y'all. Like, for the people that want to defend the police, I don't really understand where you're coming from. Like, just take our word for it. How about that? Like, how about you just, if every black person says that this is happening and every individual black man that you meet has their own story about a brush with the law that didn't go well, even though they didn't do anything wrong, maybe there's something to it. Like, I don't know. But the Tamir Rice thing was crazy, of course, because, you know, even though he probably shouldn't have been out in public playing around with a toy gun the way he was, that doesn't give you the right to just drive up on him and hop out spraying without asking any questions. You know, on TV and the movies back in the day, it was always freeze, put the gun down, like that kind of stuff. Like, apparently they just hopped out and opened fire on a kid. Like, that's absurd. And of course, you know, the police officers involved aren't going to be held accountable because let them tell it was a perfect storm or whatever. And the people who were involved in that process, you know, there's a lot of accusations of nefarious behavior by the individuals who were supposed to be deciding whether or not this was going to go to trial and that whole thing. So you guys can research that on your own. But Tamir Rice's mother has kind of laid into LeBron James a little bit and said that, you know, LeBron needs to step up. And I think her exact quote was like, he needs to at least put on a t-shirt or something. This is tough. It's tough because I understand why she feels that way. She's not going to see the justice for her son's death that she should, which is unfortunate, obviously. And I get that. I don't feel like it's LeBron James's responsibility to necessarily be at the forefront of every major issue affecting Black America, even though he is one of the most powerful figures in Black America. But there's two things, though, that you have to keep in mind. One is that LeBron has already stepped out on these types of issues in the past. And I commend him for it. But in the past, we've seen him speak out against Donald Sterling. We saw him put on an I Can't Breathe t-shirt regarding Eric Garner. We saw him organize the everybody wearing the hoodies with the Miami Heat when the Trayvon Martin thing went down. So he's in touch, socially. Like, he's in touch on these social issues, on these police brutality issues. He's not totally oblivious to what's going on. So that's part of it. You have to keep that in mind. The other thing is, this happened in Cleveland, Ohio. This is LeBron's account, right? This happened on LeBron's, I don't want to say LeBron's watch, but like, this is his account. This happened in Cleveland. And I think part of the cool thing about LeBron and the Heat supporting Trayvon Martin was that was his account back then, because Trayvon Martin happened in Florida and LeBron was playing in Florida at the time, and then the team rallied around Trayvon Martin. The fact that LeBron came out and said that, you know, he didn't know enough about the story, I think people read a little bit too much into that. I think really he was just coming out of a game. He's trying to get his bearings still, and maybe, you know, wasn't prepared to answer that type of question in that exact moment. And I can kind of understand that. But I think given the fact that LeBron is, and LeBron has done a lot for the community, so I don't want to act like he hasn't. We've written about it on the site. You guys can look it up on the website. LeBron has done a lot for Cleveland and Northeast Ohio and for, you know, young black kids and all that type of stuff. But I feel like that he probably should have done... he probably should have said or done something a little bit beyond what he said and done to this point regarding Tamir Rice, because it happened in Cleveland. And because of his responsibility to the community and everything he put in the letter about coming back and you know, being that it's bigger than just basketball and all that type of stuff, considering that LeBron has set a precedent for supporting people that have been victims of police brutality in the past, and the fact that this is happening in Cleveland, I feel like if he says or does something to support the Rice family beyond what he's done to this point, I would understand that, and I would think that that was probably the way to go. Now, that doesn't mean that he should be the end-all be-all and that black people need to be looking at LeBron every time something goes down. That I don't agree with. So every time something goes down, you see Al Sharpton show up. You see Jesse Jackson show up. I don't need to see Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and LeBron in a split screen on CNN. I don't need to see that. Like, LeBron is a basketball player. Let that man play basketball. But there are certain issues and certain circumstances that arise that it kind of would be nice if he were a little bit more forceful with his words or said something of a little more substance than what he said to this point. And that doesn't mean that he won't come out and support the Rice family. Or that he hasn't, you know, that he won't do something more in the near future. But I just think that to this point, it would have been nice if we've seen a little bit more from him on this issue. The one thing I can't help but realize or think about, though, is that because this police brutality thing is kind of a divisive issue and does kind of separate a large scale of the population, it makes me wonder that maybe LeBron didn't say anything because this was in Cleveland. Like, maybe, you know, the last thing LeBron wants to do is ruffle feathers coming back to Cleveland, because he's trying to get back in the good graces of the people of Cleveland. That's what he was trying to do. That's why he wrote the letter the way he did. That's why he held that big extravaganza in the stadium at Akron when he came back and they had the girl playing the song on the piano. I'm coming home. All that stuff. Like, LeBron was trying to reconnect with the people of Northeast Ohio. And the people who were most pissed at LeBron when he left were white people. White people were pissed off at LeBron. Clevelanders, most black people who are from Cleveland, were not supporting LeBron after he left. They just weren't. They thought he betrayed him and all that stuff. Black people outside of Cleveland, and this is just based on people that I've talked to face to face, you know, all that type of stuff. Black people outside of Cleveland, they didn't have a problem with LeBron leaving. Because the black people of Cleveland specifically, not even Akron, the black people of Cleveland had a problem with him leaving. Black people in Akron, white people in Akron, I don't think they had as big of a deal with it. But white people in general, in and outside of Cleveland, they're the ones that ripped him to shreds more than anybody else. And so if he comes back and speaks on this issue with Tamir Rice, and then he divides the population because a lot of white people support what the police have done or don't think the police have done anything wrong and think that LeBron would then be out of line or whatever, and then he creates this division within the city, I could see him maybe wanting to abstain from that entire situation on some level. I don't know that that's the case, y'all. I'm just saying. I'm just talking off the top of my head, and I feel like that may have had something to do with why he hasn't said or done a lot to this point. But I do know that LeBron has a good heart, that he does offer his sympathies to the Rice family, and he means it sincerely. And it's just an unfortunate set of circumstances. But I don't know, man. I just think that maybe there had to be some other reason as to why he didn't step up as much as he did, or he did. It seems like he would have stepped up more than what he has, I guess you could say. And hopefully he does more in the future. And I don't think, you know, just because Tamir Rice's mother calls him out doesn't mean he has to do anything. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something a little bit more from him down the road on this topic. But then again, if he does, then he opens himself up to now every person who feels like they've been wrong, they just publicly call out LeBron James, and now he has to come to the fight. Like, it's a slippery slope, and I empathize with LeBron's position on that level as well. So we'll leave it there, man. Thank you guys for listening. NFL playoffs are this weekend. I thought we were going to talk about that on the podcast tonight, but we didn't, so I'll probably have to write something up and make my picks there. This is going to be the hardest weekend to predict in the wild card round that I can remember. But you'll hear from me in some form or fashion. You'll hear my picks. Jay Hicks, preseason podcast of the year, signing off. Thanks, guys. Again, thank you, DC Hendricks, for dropping by. Go out and check out all of his stuff that he plugged earlier, his website and his radio show, and his Twitter. Our Twitter is at HHS Report. Go ahead and tweet us, Facebook us, whatever. Make sure you please subscribe to the podcast on Stitcher and iTunes, y'all. And we please need you to rate the podcast and comment. All that stuff is important, and it helps us get higher listings and things of that nature. So as much as you can, please do that stuff. And we appreciate you guys. Shout out to Kenneth Hicks and Anthony Houston for all their hard work. Shout out to each and every one of you for making the podcast and the website what it is. I love you guys. Thank you so much. We're out of here. Peace. She work another plan to heaven. Follow the Lord all 24/7 days. God is who we praise. Even though the devil's all up in my face, but he keeping me safe and in my place. Say grace to the gates we race. Without a chance to face the judge, and against my soul will buzz. Grudge me cause there's no mercy for dust. Ooh, what can I do? It's all about the family and how we grow. Can I get a witness? Let it unfold. We live in our lives, we turn our soul. Hey-o, hey-o. Now follow me, Rosto, weather is telling us seven. Come, let's go take a visit to the people that's long gone there. While he's a terrible, instead of keeping up with their family. Exactly how many days we got lasting? While you laughing, we're passing the way. We gon' raise our souls, cause I know I'ma meet you up at the crossroad. Y'all know if I ever got love with them both thugs, baby. Let me be long gone, really wish you could come home. But when it's time to die, gotta go bye-bye. All the little thug could do was cry. Kill my dog. Yeah, man, I miss my Uncle Charles, y'all. And he shouldn't be gone in front of his home. When they did, the boo was wrong. Who's the wrong? Who's the wrong? Gotta hold on, gotta stay strong. When it comes, better believe on. Gotta show that you can lean on. Lean on. Yeah, we pray, we pray, we pray, we pray. Every day. Can somebody, anybody tell me why? We die, we die. I don't wanna die.